But we are in an election cycle. I don't think that's a mystery to anybody. I don't think that's news to anyone. And in the midst of that, we've got a lot of things on our hearts, a lot of things on our minds. Kurt, dead in line with what we're talking about this month. And I shared last week with you guys what I can and cannot say. We got into some of the legal stuff there. I'm not going to review that. So you can go back and listen to that last week. But I do want you guys to continue to keep me accountable to make sure that what I'm saying, because and honestly, I'm undecided, so I'm not even pushing anybody out here. So if something comes out like I am pushing somebody, then let me know, because it's not intentional by any means. So even if I did have someone selected in my head, then I still wouldn't be doing that, one for me and for you, but also legally that doesn't work with our tax exempt status and whatnot there. So I am not supporting a certain candidate. I'm not opposing a certain candidate directly or indirectly. So that was a little bit from last week there on the legal side of things. The main concerns that I've been seeing in this cycle, in this election cycle, have been a little bit different than normal, and that's what kind of spurred the topic, the subjects that we're talking about this month. Because typically you're thinking about issues and some of the issues that, you know, this candidate thinks about this, this candidate thinks about this, what does the Bible say about this issue? And this year, and I have mixed feelings on it. It's a little concerning on one side that just really doesn't seem to be a concern for a lot of people. But the other side of the coin is that they're concerned about things that are a little bit bigger than that. They're concerned about which leader is going to take us in a certain direction. What's the future of America look like? Is this vote, is this the fulcrum of what's going to cause a lot of major changes? What does security look like for the future of living in America and being an American? What does our economic system look like? Not just economic stability, not just balancing the budget, not just paying off whatever trillions of dollars, you know. We're concerned if the economic system that we've been used to running, if that's going to change. These are major, major concerns. Things as simple but as big as truth-telling and honesty. That's just become increasingly, it's been increasingly gaining concern among our leaders, but it seems to be highlighted and just a lot bigger this year than it has been. How free are we going to be in the free world? What kind of freedoms, are we going to see some of those freedoms start to disappear? So I felt like in the midst of all this and what Kurt was talking about, we've got the media and the social media and the ads and the commercials and my kids grab the mail and they read those different things and they ask questions, and I don't mind at all having dialogue with them. They've been fully involved in my feelings and opinions on everything and the conversations that all of you have at home. And the understanding of all that kind of put together, I thought it would be really nice this month to just really get some biblical perspective on the subject of leadership, on looking at how God takes care of his people and how he took care of his nation of Israel, where we are, in my understanding, in the New Testament, we are the new Israel. We are God's chosen people. As Peter shares that, we are a chosen generation. He was writing to all Christians. So in the midst of all that, so my goal is to provide a fresh angle to look at all of this through encouragement, and for us to refocus on God as our commander in chief. No matter who holds the human title come January, our God is our commander in chief. And I think especially in this year, and the way things have been going and all the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, it's so easy for us to lose sight of that. And I want us to be reminded of that every week during this month as we get prepared for our November coming up, that our God is our commander-in-chief. And we can't lose sight of that. We can't fall into the pattern, or not the pattern, but the trap of thinking, oh no, this one individual is going to change everything about, and it might change some things, but we are men and women of faith, And we have a God who doesn't change. And we have a God who's in charge of everything. Last week for communion meditation, for the second service, I read a passage from Colossians. And we'll have this up on the screen as well. Paul says, the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things, everyone say all things. All things have been made, have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Jesus holds everything together. No matter how much it feels like it's falling apart, no matter how crazy it feels like it is, Jesus holds everything together. We need to be reminded of that. And if that's all you get for five Sundays in this series, then I'm fine with that. We need to be reminded of that sometimes, and especially times like these, when we've got a lot of concerns and a lot of worries on our mind and a lot of big concerns. Our God's still in charge, and Jesus holds all things together, and he is over everything. He was before everything. He made everything. If it's a power or authority or ruler, it's there because he made it. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have supremacy. So Jesus is fully supreme over any ruler or power. All things were held together. All things are held together by Jesus. Not this candidate. Not this candidate. Not this party or that party. All things are held together by Jesus. And he's head over the church, that he might have supremacy in everything. Last week we talked about a couple of really good biblical leaders. We talked about Moses and Deborah. And looked at some of their qualities. And if you missed it, I encourage you to listen to that online and get caught up. Today we're going to continue in the pattern of looking at some biblical leaders this week and next week, and then the last 2 weeks in the series, we're going to be looking at some of our responsibilities as Christians when it comes to how to handle different governments. And so we'll be going to the New Testament and then the Old Testament for that. So today we're looking at a comparison of a couple of other kings. Last week it was too good. Today it's not good and good. So David and Saul, or Saul and David, to share their names in chronological order and how you guys would have it up there. I'll try and let Miranda know when I'm, or Jim's sitting at the computer now, when I'm hitting scripture. So we're going to just kind of review a little bit through definitely Saul's story, and that includes some of David, and then we'll get some of David a little bit later. So after Moses led the Israelites, we're talking about Moses last week. After Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, then Joshua led the Israelites into the promised land. And then Israel was established, and God's plan was to provide judges to lead the country. And that's, Deborah was one of those judges. And so we caught some of that history last week. The judges were there to keep order and to keep focus. They were there also to lead the military and defend and protect God's people and the land that God had given them. Having judges as the leader the leaders of Israel, that was God's idea. That was God's plan. But this wasn't enough for the Israelites. They wanted a king. They wanted to be like everybody else. Johnny has a scoop of ice cream. Can I have a scoop of ice cream? That was the mentality, really, of what was going on there. They said, look at everybody else. Everybody else has a king. How are we going to be great without a king? How are we going to be a nation without a king? Everyone else has a king. But worse than this, keeping up with the Joneses mentality that's revealed through that idea of, hey, we need a king, we need a king. It was a direct reflection on the leadership structure that God had set up. And not only that, it was a direct reflection of their opinion of God as their king. When Samuel was the prophet during this time, some lists will call him a judge because he was in that line. He was before the kings and kind of after the last judges in the book of Judges. He was definitely a prophet, and he was definitely leading Israel, so he was serving in that capacity. And whatever you want to call it, he was the leader. And he was understood to be the leader. And so Samuel, as he was getting older, the elders of Israel came to him, and they said in Samuel 8:5, You are old and your sons do not follow your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have. And that's just one little verse in that. There's a whole bit of their discussion there on how other places have kings and we want a king. So Samuel was offended by this. And he was their leader, and he had set up his sons to take over and to be leaders after him. And so he goes to God, and he prays to God. And when he prays to God, God says this. He says, "It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king." That's a strong statement. And God's on one side, he's saying, "Samuel, I feel you. I know what you're feeling, but it's not they've rejected you as their leader. They've rejected me as their king." And that's a big deal. That's more than just wanting to keep up with the Joneses. So one thing led to another, and God gave them what they asked for, which is kind of a scary thing when you think about it. It makes me think about how many things have I asked for, even begged God for, something that didn't seem bad in my eyes. It seemed like a good thing. It seemed like the right thing. It seemed like something that would be beneficial. But God knew that it wasn't going to be as good as what he had planned for me. But I wonder how many times I've asked him for those things, and he went ahead and gave them to me, even though he knew that there was something better. You know, that just kind of gets me when you see this story. God's like, "Well, here's my plan. Here's how I've set it up. But I'm going to give you what you've asked for." And so that's just a little bonus on the side just to be thinking about. You know, just careful what we ask for. You know, instead of, I know there have been many times, you know, where I've been wanting some financial security, and so I asked for money. Instead, I should be asking for God to help take care of me, whatever that means. See, it's a small difference. But one way I'm asking for something that I think is going to be beneficial, and this way I'm leaving it up to God's will. And I think that's a big deal. And that's just a little thing as I was reading through and reviewing the story of David and Saul, that I was like, wow, that's kind of big. That's kind of potent point. So God decides to give him a king, and Samuel was sent to appoint Saul as the first king of Israel, to anoint him as king. And it was clear that God was the one who chose Saul. He was not chosen by the people. They wanted a king, but God chose Saul. And I think that's very important to note. This is in 1 Samuel chapter 9. Now the day before Saul came, the Lord revealed this to Samuel. "About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him ruler over my people, Israel. He will deliver them from the hand of the Philistines. I have looked on my people, for their cry has reached me." So there's a little transformation process that happens to Saul as his heart's being changed, and he's anointed as king of Israel. And Saul had some really good success early on in his time. At first, he defeated the Amorites, and then he went after the Philistines and he ran them out. And then he went against the Amalekites and defeated them. And Saul was told when he went into battle with the Amalekites that he was to completely destroy them. And that was including women and children. It was pretty brutal. It was get rid of everything. And among those early successes that Saul had, he had a couple of really, really bad decisions where he stepped out of line. One of those was the first when he was going up against the Philistine army. Instead of asking Samuel or waiting on Samuel to come to do this, to give the sacrifice, which was his position, Saul offered the sacrifice himself before they went into battle. And so for us, we'd kind of like, well, what's the big deal? And that wasn't what he was supposed to do, and it was a sign of disobedience. It was a sign of just completely shoving the God's plans aside and saying, "I want to do things my own way, and I don't want to wait on Samuel, and we got to get in and get these Philistines out of here." And so that was the first thing he did that was a big black mark on him. Then the other thing that he did during that time is that he spared Agag, which was the king of the Amalekites. I think he was the king. And some of the treasures during the attack on the Amalekites. And that's a big deal because God told him to get rid of what? Everything. That's treasure. That's everything. That's the women and children were included in that list. It was a very direct command. Level it. Get rid of everything. But Saul thought it would be a good idea to bring in some of these treasures and to, you know, to keep Agag. And this was something that Achan, I don't know if you guys remember this, but Achan in Joshua chapter 7 was put to death for doing this in the midst of a battle under Joshua's lead. But Saul doesn't get the death penalty for this. It's kind of worse because it's after this that Samuel says on behalf of God in chapter 15, he says, "You are rejected. You have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you as king over Israel." So then God sends Samuel to anoint David to succeed Saul as king, and that's the following chapter in chapter 16 of 1 Samuel. It's after this little anointing of David that we see the famous story of David and Goliath, which many of us are very familiar with. And then David becomes Saul's personal musician and plays for him. David was a musician and played wonderfully. And so Saul was jealous of David, and he tries to have him killed. He tries to have him killed in a couple of different ways. He sends him out to battle with the odds stacked against him. And that didn't work. David came back mighty in battle. He was a mighty warrior. So he tried to have David assassinated, and that didn't succeed. And then Saul himself tried to kill him through his own spirit, David. That's in chapter 18. It says, "While David was playing the lyre, as he usually did, Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, 'I'll pin David to the wall.' But David eluded him twice." So this happened twice. Fool me once. Yeah. So then David fled and Saul pursued him, and this just became a big ordeal through a lot of the chapters in 1st, 2nd Samuel. During this hunt, David had the opportunity to kill Saul twice, but he did not. However, on the other side of things, we have David over here doing this, and on the other side of things, Saul had a whole set of priests executed because they harbored David. And so that was a big deal. Saul was taken away from the hunt. Saul was taken away from the hunt of David because the Philistines were putting pressure on them again. And so he had to go and defend against the Philistines. In the midst of this, Saul consults a medium, which is a witch. And he had expelled all of the mediums, all of the witches expelled. Pun intended for me, but I don't think the NIV intended a pun. Here's what the NIV says. It says, Saul had expelled, if you put a hyphen in there, it makes it add an S, it's kind of funny. Saul had expelled the mediums and spiritists from the land. So Saul was at battle with the Philistines and he was scared, and so he prayed to God and God didn't give him an answer. So he went in disguise to this witch, this medium, and he brought Samuel back from the dead to ask his advice. And he's like, what are you doing? No way. And it just goes very, 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 very bad for Saul. He was completely defeated in battle. Three of his sons were slain. One of those was Jonathan. And Jonathan was a dear friend of David. That's a whole nother section of the story. Jonathan, David's relationship and including that with him being Saul's son. So Saul's three of his sons die in battle. Then after being completely defeated, having three of his sons slain, Saul then kills himself. He commits suicide. So let's take a few notes here on Saul. Saul was not a good leader. He started off good. It did not end good. It didn't even in the start when it was sort of good, he had some good things, but there were some bad things kind of mixed in with that. Doing the sacrifice instead of Samuel and saving Agag and the treasures from the Amalekites. So Saul's bad leadership qualities. First one is pride. Saul became very me-concerned, very me-centered. Pride. Jealousy. He became very jealous of David. He wanted the spotlight. He didn't want to share the spotlight with David. David was an amazing musician, played for him. Saul enjoyed that. The people loved David. David was charismatic. We'll get to that in a minute. He was mighty in battle. He was courageous. He was just an awesome guy. And Saul didn't care much for that at all. He was jealous, and jealousy was a bad leadership quality he had. Impatience. He did things in his own time. I'm not going to wait on Samuel. I'm going to do things in my own time. That's a bad leadership quality. Disobedience. He did things his own way. God said, do this. I think it'd be better if I did this. In fact, when he comes back from the battle with the Amalekites and Samuel confronts him about that, he's like, I did what God said. He had convinced himself that he was obeying. He was that centered on doing what he wanted to do. And we've encountered people like that. So bad leadership qualities. Let's look at David. And a lot of us are familiar with David's stories. He's a lot more popular character, and so we won't be getting to as much detail as Saul. But like Saul, God chose David also. We're told that David was a man after God's own heart. And here are a few reasons why we see that, what we see in that. First of all, the story of David and Goliath is one of the many stories that reveals this, that his faith in God was larger than the obstacle before him. That's a man after God's own heart. His faith in God was larger, was greater than the obstacle before him. A lot of us are familiar with the story of David and Goliath, where David sees the challenge presented by the Philistines, that there was this one man, and he was a giant man. He was 9 foot tall, and no one in Israel had enough faith in God to go up against this giant to defend Israel against the Philistines. And so David goes out armed with his faith, 5 smooth stones and a sling, and brings victory to God's nation. So he had faith. His faith was larger than any obstacle. He had a deep regard for God's anointed. This was a respect of God. And in addition to God, anything that God had touched, anything that God had set in place, anything that God had said or done, this reflection was there. He had a deep regard for God's anointed. This was seen during the time when Saul was hunting David. And David had 2 times when he could have killed Saul. He was in a position, a very good position, where he could have taken Saul out. And he could have been done with all the headache, done with all the heartache, done with all the running. He was already anointed king. He was already anointed king. He already had the people's favor. If he'd have just killed him, it would have been done. But we're told that he had such a regard for God's anointed that Saul was God's anointed king, and David wasn't going to mess that up. He wasn't going to step into that and take matters into his own hands. And that's a big deal to see that. I mean, can you imagine the temptation in the midst of that and to be able to withstand holding back from that? And that happened twice. Alongside these great stories of David, we have one story. That one story. When you think of David, you think David and Goliath, and you think David and Bathsheba. And so we have that one story where he made many, many bad choices all in that one segment of his life. I mean, lust and adultery, lies, deception, murder. Those are just naming a few of the big ones that were involved in that. But in that story, we do see something that's a very, very important quality that reveals that he had a heart that was chasing after God, and that is that his sincere sorrow and repentance showed that his desire for God was greater than his pride, shame, embarrassment. He tried to cover it up, but once it was out, once he was busted, he was a repentant man. He laid his pride down. And that any time something like that happens, that's an embarrassing time. It's a shameful time. And it's a time when it's a whole lot easier to just, muscle up and deny it even more, or come up with more lies or whatever. But David didn't. He was busted. He fell in repentance. And that sincere repentant heart, that sincere sorrow showed a desire for God, that his desire for God was greater than his pride. So David's good leadership qualities. A couple things we see in David, quite different from Saul. The story of David and Goliath is just one of the many stories where we see David's faith and courage. So we can write that down. He was courageous and mighty in battle. He was courageous as a shepherd with his dad, protecting the sheep from lions and tigers and bears. Actually, it doesn't mention tigers. It does mention lions and bears, though. He had defended sheep against lions and bears. That's courageous. That's a big deal. He himself would often lead the troops into battle as king. even when he wasn't king, but he was serving under Saul. He was already known at that time as a mighty in battle. And then after that, even as king, he would lead his troops into battle often. He was charismatic and tactful. David could motivate people to follow his lead. There's so many different examples of that, and this is one of the things that really bugged Saul and created that jealousy, was David's charisma. He was definitely someone that people would get behind, and he started as a king with a small, divided group of people and ended with a successful empire. It's a big deal. David was an awesome king for Israel. He was passionate. His heart would lead him close to God. You could just read through the Psalms and you can see his heart. And you can see how that passion just longed to be close to God, longed to be with God. David did have his shortcomings, though. And that's worth listing, because he was a human. He had some shortcomings. There are times when he could be deceptive. In his culture, sometimes that wasn't considered a negative thing. Sometimes it was considered, creative, or he had guile or whatever, but when you look at it from just top-down perspective, he was deceptive at times. The many sins around the Bathsheba incident, that was definitely a bad time for David. That was not a good time. That was a shortcoming for sure. And David's family was a mess. We're not even going to dive into that today. But oh my goodness, it was a mess. And so if you looked at his leadership qualities and you think, man, he can lead the nation like this, but what's he doing with his family? It was just, it was a mess. So he had some really good things. And as I was reviewing the story of David, I think sometimes we get that one glaring bad thing in our mind, and we just really attach David to that. But as I was reviewing the story of David and who David was and what he did as the king, it goes further than just the 1 and 2 Samuel listed there in your bulletin. He was an amazing king. He was an amazing man and an amazing personality. And really, as I was looking through things, I was like, man, he had this one really, really, really bad time. But aside from that, he really did some great things for Israel. And he was really a man that was after God's own heart. And a man that the line of the Messiah came through. And that was something that was an honor for him. And because of his relationship with God, God would not allow the nation to be split under Solomon's rule. He reserved that for after Solomon's rule was over. Because of God's relationship with David. That had nothing to do with God and Solomon. That had everything to do with God and David. And so he was just really, really awesome guy. Just some reflections on this. We've got a bad leader. We've got some bad qualities that can give us a biblical view on leadership. We've got a good leader. We've got some good qualities where he's also got some things that, he's got some things that are really awesome, where he's got a heart after God, but he's also got some of these other things where he's had some shortcomings. But all in all, he does have some really good leadership qualities, David, on this side. So reflection on Saul first. Even a God-chosen leader can turn out to be a bad leader. It's a potent point to make in the midst of a lot of the concerns that we have right now. Even a God-chosen leader can turn out to be a bad leader. In 1 Samuel 15, it says, when the word of the Lord came to Samuel, I regret that I made Saul king, because he has turned away from me and has not carried out my instructions. Samuel was angry and he cried out to the Lord all that night. And Samuel anointed him. Samuel did what God told him to do. And here we have this guy that's just not good. Not good for Israel. Not good for leading people to God. Not good for anything there. But God chose him. God chose Saul. So even a God-chosen leader can be a bad leader. And I think where this connects with us and our concern and our stress, what if I vote for the wrong candidate in November? What if I vote the wrong person in the office? What if I'm on the side and I vote this person in and you know, 2 or 3 years down the road, I'm really regretting placing my vote for this candidate? I want us to be able to come back to this and remember that even a God-chosen candidate can turn out to be a bad leader. And I think that's something that we can take a little bit personal. Ironically, the inverse can happen. And I say ironically because it happened with another guy named Saul, who became Paul in the New Testament. He was a guy that no one would have looked at and said, man, that guy, he's awful for the church. He was opposite of Saul. And when Saul was brought into office, Saul, King Saul, he was great for the kingdom. He was making some great, he had some early successes that were on point. But then he started kind of mixing in these bad decisions and he ended up becoming a bad leader. But then you got Saul in the New Testament and you look at him and you wouldn't, none of us here would look at him and said, you know what, that's the guy that's going to take the gospel to the Gentiles. None of us would have thought that. I assure you no one in the early church was thinking that. Ananias, when God says, hey, Saul's going to come and visit you. And he's like, wait a minute. What did I do wrong? You know, do you know who Saul is? You know he's been persecuting the way, the church. We wouldn't have thought of Saul as turning around, but he did. Jesus got a hold of Saul and he turned to Paul, and look at what he did. He took the gospel to the Gentiles. We've got a number of books in the New Testament written by Paul, who was Saul. So the change can happen both ways. Let's write that down. Changes can happen both for the good or the bad. So we could vote the right person into office and they could turn bad. We could even vote the wrong person into office, and if God gets a hold of their heart, they could turn to good. We have to believe that can happen. Because if we stop believing that can happen, then what good is my belief in my own salvation? Because God took me and he turned my heart around. And he saved me, and he forgave me. He gave me a different perspective on life. He gave me a new purpose. He gave me new priorities. Didn't he do that for you when he saved you? Yes, I sure hope he did. If he didn't, then we need a revival right now. I need to be preaching something completely different. Didn't God change you when he came into you? When he came into your life? Think about who you were before Christ and who you were after Christ. Think about how your perspective changed, how you treated people, what was important to you changed. Just because the candidates are who they are doesn't rule them outside of God's grace. Just what Kurt was talking about, which when Kurt was sharing the communion meditation, I was like, man, we're on the same line. So it's encouraging when that happens. Don't lose faith in the grace that saved you, church. Because that grace can save and change whoever our leader is in January. I don't care what they've done, where they've been. My past didn't matter to God. We need to pray about that. We need to pray for that. That whoever it is, that God would get a hold of their heart. So let's look at David, a little reflection on David, that even a good leader can have glaring bad moments. That's a sad truth. David really was a good leader. And when you think of David, you think David and Goliath, and you think David and Bathsheba. You don't think David sparing Saul's life. You don't think David, you know, raising money to build the temple. You don't think David running around parading through the streets, you know, half naked. Because he's just so joyous and celebrating and worshiping God. That's where his heart was. Even a good leader can have glaring bad moments in their life. We need to remember we're dealing with humans here. God is the ultimate authority. over who is and who is not in power. I told you we're going to be reminded of that. I could see that being a reminder every Sunday, and I don't think that's a bad thing. From different perspectives, but that same message. God is the ultimate authority over who is and who is not in power. Pilate. When Jesus is before Pilate and they're talking, Pilate, who basically gives the permission to crucify Jesus, he had to give his stamp of approval. He washed his hands of it and kind of took a weak way out there. But Pilate, over that whole area, and we're told in that conversation that Jesus has with Pilate, Jesus says this to Pilate, he says, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." That's a statement from a man that was beaten and bloody and wearing a crown of thorns and had been mocked and whipped. And he looks into Pilate's eyes and he says, "You'd have no authority, no power over me if it weren't given to you from above." That's a powerful statement. And we need to be reminded of that, church. There's no one who is in power without that power being granted to them by God. Good or bad. Healthy or unhealthy. Good decisions, bad decisions. Good for the country, bad for the country. There's no man or woman who's in power than someone who God has allowed to be in that position. We get that from Jesus as he talks to Pilate. "You'd have no power if it weren't given to you from above." Saul was king for a while after David had been anointed to be king of Israel. But Saul did not have power over David. God protected him. God was his deliverer. God was his cleft in the rock, as we sing. And like we see in the life of David, God will be our protector and our defender as well. We have to have faith in that. We have to trust in that. That wasn't just something special for David. God provides us that deliverance, that protection as well. And so in light of all this, pray. Write that down, circle it, underline it, write it in bold letters. Pray that God will guide your vote this November, because he always sees and knows more than we do. He always sees and knows more than we do. This is what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be leaning on God for wisdom. I can't make a good decision on my own here. I don't feel like I can. I've tried to think this way and think that way and read this and read that and look at this and look at that and listen to this person, listen to that person. And I just need to pray. And I need to ask God, "Who do you want me to pull the lever for? Because I don't see what you see. I don't know what you know." And I think that's the best thing that Christians can do in any time in their life, but especially in a time right now where we're concerned about some major things. What does our freedom look like? What does our economic system look like? What direction is our country going to go in? We need to be praying about who we're going to vote for. I have to believe that whoever it is that's in office, that they have power only because God has allowed them to have power. I have to believe that even if we make a great choice, that great choice could become a bad leader. Or even if we make a bad choice, that bad person could become a good leader. Changes can happen. And I have to pray. We have to pray. Because with our limited vision, we don't know what the wisest choice is. But God does. God knows. And he will guide us if we allow him to. He will lead us if we seek him as our king and not a human. Pray with me. Father, thank you so much for these stories, reminding us of the history of your people, how they acted, how you acted, what you thought even. You give us glimpses into your mentality, glimpses into your emotions, how things made you feel. Father, I pray that you would help us in the midst of this time. I believe that a majority of us, if not all of us, are deeply concerned over what's going on in our country right now. And I think that's a valid concern. And so we cry out to you. And we do our best to lay our anxieties at the foot of your throne. Help us, as the man said to Jesus, help. We believe, but help our unbelief. Help us to lay those things down and not pick them back up. That we would lean on you and trust in you and to know that your Son is supreme over all powers and rulers and authorities. And that we would find comfort in that. That we would pray for our choice coming up in November, and that we would pray for the candidate, whoever it would be, that you would get a hold of their heart and you would change their life. And yes, a motivation for us is because we want our country to be in good hands. But how much better of a motivation would it be for us to just simply pray for the salvation of that person's soul, so that they can have you in their life, so that they can go to heaven. Thank you so much for saving us as individuals, showing us the change that you make in our hearts, showing us the difference you make in our lives. Help us to remember that and to hope for that in others, and to do everything we can to help make that happen in the world around us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Pray, 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 church. Pray and trust. Pray and have faith. Take some examples from David. Be courageous in the midst of this time. Be faithful. That's a big challenge. It's a simple challenge this week, but that's the big challenge. Pray. Anytime you see something on Facebook about the election, say a quick prayer. God, give me wisdom in November. Give this other person wisdom in November. Anytime you see something on the news, when you're sitting here, you know, those of you guys who might be watching debates today, isn't it? Later tonight? Isn't there a town hall meeting type style debate where it's going to have some? Yes. While you're watching that, if you watch it, or if you just think about it, that it's on, pray. When you hear conversations at work, say a little prayer. When you have conversations at home, say a little prayer. Pray with your family. Pray, 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 pray. Anytime an election topic comes up, pray. Anytime a thought of one of the candidates comes up, pray. Anytime a thought of one of the parties comes up, pray. Pray. And remember how God changed you. Don't give up on the faith that you have in the grace of your salvation, because that's for other people too, just like Kurt was saying earlier.